Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. Today, we're flipping the script a little bit. So last time we talked about something that Brent had been dying to hear about.
Yeah.
This time, we're going to be talking about Master Builder University, something that I've been dying to hear about that I haven't asked any questions about.
Wow.
Because I knew we were going to talk about it here.
So yeah, we had our inaugural Master Builder weekend a couple weekends ago. I learned a lot. I learned a lot prepping for it. I learned
a lot. You taught it. Just to be
I taught it, yeah. Right? So basically, the guys came in on a Thursday. We had dinner. Friday morning, they got here, and we spent most of the morning into the early afternoon with classes. So we had a class on classicism, classical design. We had a sketching session. We had a library session, talked about how to build a library, what that looks like. Then we had a historic precedent talk. We kind of wrapped that up. We ran down to my shop. We looked at the shop real quick. We went to a job that's in construction, the Italian Revival House. We went to a job of a completed thing, the tavern that I think people have looked at and seen. And then we went to Joe T's and I had a great Mexican dinner at Joe T's. And then Saturday morning, I didn't finish till about 4 o'clock. We had one-on-ones. So me with the different participants, there was 10 to 12 participants. There was 10 to 12. There was 13 people here.
So not even 10 to 12. Yeah.
We looked for 10 people. We were hoping for 10 to 12. We ended up with 13.
So you're doing those one-on-ones. What did everyone else do? Were they kind of...
They kind of hung out in here and they kind of talked together and kind of did some time sketching, did some time looking at stuff. But there was a real camaraderie building time cool. there. That was fun.
Do you think that helped make connections with them?
I think it did. I think it, you know, it's... So we had three of the participants were in... Well, didn't own their own business. I shouldn't say it that way. One of them didn't own his own business. Mm-hmm. Two of them were just kind of starting out with new businesses. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of them were fairly sophisticated group of builders, fairly sophisticated group of remodelers and people who were trying to build better businesses. And so mm-hmm. it was, you know, we had, you know, builders that were doing, you know, $30 million a year that were doing more custom homes. Mm-hmm. And we had, you know, guys like me that did, you know, ground up new builds as well as remodeling. And then we had one of the guys had a mill shop like ours, not as big as they did more cabinetry than us.
And so, sorry, when you're saying one did custom builds, one did ground up new builds, are those the same thing?
Yeah. So, no. So there's basically in the world of building, there's remodelers and then there's builders. Okay. That's the big categories.
Yeah.
Within that remodelers things, there's guys who are handyman people mm-hmm. to guys who do, you know, kitchens and baths to people that do siding. And those are big businesses and whatever else, but they tend to be like production builders in that world. But then there's also remodelers that do high end remodels like us or historic preservation. That's the remodeling world. In the building side, there's like production builders, the D.R. Hortons of the world. Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole category of custom, sometimes called semi-custom builders, which, you know, that is everybody from, you know, with a production builder, you're I think Duane said, you know, in the building world, there's clients, customers, something in victims, right?
And so competitors and
no, he was describing the different class of homeowners and, you know, that the client was the high end, the customer was the next one, and then there's victims. And the victims are the people who get work, who have to buy a production house, okay?
Yeah.
Now, most houses built in America are production houses, right? And so most houses in America do not have an architect involved, right? Which is another rant. And so once you get away from the people who are building 1,000 houses a year, even probably up into the 300-400 houses a year, if you're building 300 houses a year, you know, 12 months in a year, you know, you're building a lot of houses each month, 30 houses a month about.
Or you've got one development there. They're all coming up at the same time.
And so what that means is that you are cycling people through a mill, right? You've got three choices of countertops. Pick one. You can have an accent wall or you can have wood windows, right? You can have this or you can have that. But our product is a $400,000 product or a $600,000 product.
And based on what you pick.
Based on what you pick.
You're lining out in
those things. That's how most houses get built. And then there's the 1% world, which is what we do, which is high-end, custom, residential. You know, everything is custom and everything is, you know, high-end.
Yeah.
And so realize that we're the minority in that world. And so a couple of the guys that came to me were the semi-custom builders, right? Mm-hmm. They're doing, you know, they're not doing 300, they're doing 30, okay? Mm-hmm. So they're doing two or three houses a month. And so anyway,
that makes perfect sense.
Right, and so that was the world. And so a lot of them had seen my videos, had seen the Wednesday Design videos, had seen the stuff I'm doing and wanted to come, you know, be a part of that and wanted to come understand that.
Yeah.
And I think what I was prepping for and the kind of two parts of my comments, one is kind of how I prepped and what the information was. And then two, kind of, you know, what I learned in the process and what, you know, where I go from here, because I'm not sure I know exactly what I'm going to go from here. But the thing, the program I put together is that I essentially realized that there's, you know, a couple things that most builders don't know.
Yeah.
That's classical design, right? And that means, and that then drives what moldings look like, what size moldings are, how moldings are put up in a house, where they go, you know, all of those different things that are about moldings, how mantles should look, how door headers should look, where a chair rail should go, how big your crown should be, are all driven by this classical system.
Yeah.
All right, brief block there. We've dropped in a prop now to help show people what we're talking about.
Whoa!
Yeah, exactly.
Editing magic.
And it's in. So basically, this is the classical system. This is a Doric order. And people don't realize how, I got my pointer here, how this drives what a room looks like.
Yeah.
And like that thing right there is called the architrave. Architrave is basically your door casing and window casing. And this is a proportional system that's based on the human body. And, the sizes of these things will change based on whether it's a, you know, 8-foot room, 9-foot room, 10-foot room, all those moldings change because it's based on the human body. Someone that's, you know, 5'4" is going to have different size hands than someone who's 6'4" because the proportions are changing as it's growing. And that's the way this you know, classical system should work.
Right.
That's a big, you know, mic drop. That's one of those things that's just like, this will change the way you put moldings in the house. This will change the way you think about stuff.
Yeah.
If you want to understand scale and proportion, if you want to understand what this thing is, you have to know this. Okay.
Yeah.
It's that big a deal.
So, okay. I know we're talking about Master Builder. I've got a question though.
Okay.
About this.
Yeah.
So this is all based off of the golden ratio, correct?
It's not based off the golden ratio.
Okay.
The golden ratio is part of it.
Hmm.
Part of that story. But basically when the Greeks and the Romans started thinking about and you know, what should our buildings look like, you know, how should we design? They looked at the human body and saw the perfect proportion and scale that was involved in the ideal human and said, that's what our buildings should look like.
Yeah.
That's why those Greek and Roman temples are symmetrical.
Yeah.
Just like the human body is symmetrical. The face is symmetrical. It's balanced. There's harmony. There's proportion and scale.
Mm-hmm.
Go on, you knucklehead. Get out of here.
All right, fine.
Talking to my dog.
What's up, my dog?
And so, right? And so that's what it was based on, is the human body, okay?
Yes.
It was the inspiration. Now, if you look at the human body and the hand and the golden ratio involved there, the golden ratio
is found there,
right? And because they saw the proportions in nature, there's the reason why the body was held up as this model. But it isn't. Well, there's this golden ratio, and we're going to design our buildings because of that.
Is it also part of like Route 2 and Route 3 and all that? That's all just. Yeah. Cooked into the cake.
Yes, Route 2, Route 3 are all proportional things that were laid out based on, you know, these ratios.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So y'all went over that. That's a big part of
it. And then we did sketching. Sketching was received with trepidation and mixed reviews.
Why is that? You can pull it up in CAD and be done in 5 seconds, and sketching feels pointless.
I think the idea of someone picking up a pencil and sketching can be so foreign to people.
Yeah,
that it's just it was. I think one person told Brittany, just like, I don't even know what to do with this. This is just like, you know, this is stupid, or
yeah,
you know, this is what am I doing? You know, it frustrated him.
Yeah,
and so yeah, it was mixed results. And so, you know, my counter would be that, look, you know, if you look at the master builder in the past, the William Bucklands, the Samuel McIntyres, they knew how to draw and sketch. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have Samuel McIntyre's drawings.
Yeah.
Right. He entered the White House competition to see who could design the White House. Right. He was a part of that conversation. If you want to grow as a designer and a builder, you need to know how to sketch. You need to know how to draw your ideas. Even if you go onto the job site and the trim carpenter goes, I don't understand how you want this crown, right? You need to be able to sketch out how you want the crown, the spacing and the scale and everything else. So
what would you say to someone who says, well, I'm really proficient at Google SketchUp. Like, I can whip something up in SketchUp way faster than I could draw it up. Would you say, yeah, sure, that's fine. You're representing it visually.
I would say, if you go to a job site and you don't have your computer and your trim carpenter says, I need to draw this up, are you going to go back to your job, to your office, and sketch it up and send it to him? Which is fine.
Yeah.
You just wasted about 4 hours,
yeah,
or at least an hour, if not more, when you could just hand sketch it.
Sure.
So the ability to be able to understand what a section of the wall looks like and be able to draw it up, I think, is a valuable skill.
Great.
Okay. So it's...
Is this sketch or is this printed?
It's a printed line that I drew over and blackened and shaded so that it could be read more easily.
So is it printed or is it sketched? Like, did you draw that or just the shadowing?
Just the shadowing, okay, and the cool line weight. It is printed out.
Yeah, okay.
On a piece of paper. And I went through and shaded it so that it made more sense.
Yeah, okay, cool. Fun.
But the sketching was mixed reviews.
Yeah.
And then we did this thing on historic precedent. And the historic precedent...
What did that look like? Because I think you said all the pieces of the puzzle, and I was like, ooh, I'm kind of curious about what does that look like?
Historic precedent is that a Georgian entry looks different than a federal entry, looks different than a Greek Revival entry, looks different than a Victorian entry, looks different than an arts and crafts entry. Looks just in the McMansion entry, right?
Yeah.
They're all different. It's just like we were talking about in the shed in the last episode, mm-hmm, that if you're going to build a shed around a door that was built in 1780, 1820, 1890, 1920,
you have to,
they would
the
all
precedent
be different.
Yeah.
Right. And that's that historic precedent that we build differently in 1919 than you did in 1819 versus you in 2019. 2019, you tell a carpenter to build a shed. They might buy it from Home Depot, right, and assemble it. Mm-hmm. They might, you know, build it with finger jointed 2x4s,
yeah,
and T111 siding, and, you know, basically sheet goods,
yeah,
right, with cheap materials that probably wouldn't last very long, versus 1919, which is all natural materials, siding.
Yeah.
You know, you would have had something that probably would have lasted longer,
yeah,
than versus 1819. And so, right. And so
that's cool.
The you said it earlier about a narrative. There's basically a narrative or a story when something is built within a period of time. And the point of the historic precedent was understanding and seeing that precedent. I asked you about Virginia McAllister's book, Field Guide to American Houses, as being one of the first books we got at North Bennett Street, because you need to know what a Victorian house looks like. You need, mm-hmm, to know what a Greek Revival house looks like. You need to understand, what does it look like? Well, it has attributes. It has, the doors look different. The windows look different. The moldings look different. Everything is different.
Yeah.
The form is different. The massing's different. And so you need to be able to recognize those things. And
totally.
So now look, unfortunately, none of those skills, sketching, classicism, or historic precedent, are something you learn overnight. That you,
right,
go, okay, I got it. Now, you know, now I'm a master builder. I mean, I'm. Yeah, if I graduated in 93, I'm in year 31 in this business since North Bennett Street. And so it's taken a long time to to learn all this stuff.
So reception of the program, year one, you said you learned a lot.
Yeah, I mean,
how did the guinea pigs feel?
So far, the reviews have been very positive. The criticism slash recommendations would be more hands-on stuff.
And we've does that mean like cutting and like putting things up?
I don't think so. I think it's more like, okay, so if we had to design a porch for a house, what would it look like?
Cool.
How would you put that together? What would the materials be, and how would I go about doing that? And so I think if we did it again, we would probably spend more time, you know, say, okay, you got to build a front porch. Let's sketch it up. Let's figure out what it's going to look like. Let's talk about it. And talk through the materials, talk through who I would order from, how I would get it done, that kind of thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so you did it. How were your thoughts on it?
I was encouraged that people liked it. I was encouraged. I was hesitant going into it because I didn't know how well it would be received. I thought it was a little too class heavy, and I don't think it was. I think people... Yeah. It was definitely an overload. You know, so Friday, that all day class thing, one guy came in Saturday, was like, oh my gosh, I was so overwhelmed yesterday, but I feel better about it now. It's just a lot of information. And so I think it has to be followed up. I'd suggested that maybe we go to Winter Tour as a group and, you know, go look through historic rooms at Winter Tour and talk about Georgian and Greek Revival rooms so that they can start getting an eye for that stuff. And anyway.
Sweet.
Yeah. So it was, how do you train something that is kind of, my design skills and everything else have kind of evolved until, and I guess I was surprised when those Wednesday design videos blew up, why are these blowing up? What information am I sharing that's unique? Why can't other people figure this out? Mm-hmm. And so then trying to put together, they're not seeing this. There's two or three things that I know that they don't know, and then trying to put that together, it's hard.
There's another thing that's kind of funny about those Wednesday design videos is it feels like, to me, it's like none of this is something you're not saying in other videos. Like, they're all things that you say in all of your videos, but then all of a sudden you show a practical house. You show, remember when we were talking about this and this and this? This is what it looks like done right. This is what it looks like done wrong. You know what I mean? I feel like that's very hands-on, practical, helpful to where people can just go, oh yeah, there it is. That's why it looks better. I didn't know I'd feel that way when I saw it, and I thought it wouldn't look that bad.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's. I think it's a collection of 3 to 8 things that, it's usually windows. It's usually window proportion size. It's detailing of, overhangs, pitches, just little small details like that that are hard to, okay, well, how would I share that? How would I teach that? What exactly is it that I'm showing that, and how do I train that? And so I don't think that's easy. I think the walk away for us or one of the things is, what do we do next? Okay. And we had one of the builders brought his wife, who was a designer, very sophisticated couple and living in a small town. And talking to her, I was like, there's probably a lot of designers who would benefit from this. Mm. So maybe it's something that you take to designers as a program. Like, look, your designs are beautiful, but your architectural interiors aren't as sophisticated as you're in the stuff that you're doing.
Yeah.
Let's teach you how to put moldings in and do some of this architectural stuff. So I think that would be good for them.
Yeah.
We've talked about, if we did it again, how would we do it? What would it be, an extra day?
Yeah.
So we're still trying to figure that out.
We'd like to thank our sponsor for this episode, ViewRail,
America's leading manufacturer of floating stairs and modern cable glass railings.
They handle every part of the process, from design, engineering, manufacturing, delivery, all the way to installation.
There is a 10-year structural and finish warranty on all products installed by a ViewRail certified technician.
Nearly all components are made in-house, giving you more control over style, material, finishes, budget, and timeline.
All products are designed as a modular, integrated system that are engineered for easy installation. It's like putting together an erector set.
Thanks so much again, ViewRail, for sponsoring this episode. Yeah, could you have benefited from an extra day in terms of like teaching more things?
Yeah. I mean, again, my concern is that Yeah, it'd be too class heavy. And so then you're like, okay, well, maybe you go out to the shop and you have some hands-on things out at the shop where they're looking at mortise and tenon, and you're teaching them and training them and stuff. But again, it's just like, what do I know that they don't know? What's the most valuable piece of what I'm sharing? How do I share this? You know?
Yeah. Would you ever do almost a Q&A day where it's just, you know, bring your current problems? And
I had a few of them do that, and we recommended that they do that, and they showed me some of the stuff. And so
you feel like those were beneficial times, and like you're able to, look at this.
Here's I thought the one-on-one sessions were.
Well, primarily in the one-on-ones.
Yes.
Okay. So the one-on-one sessions were good, Ben?
I mean, that the day flew by for me.
Really?
Okay, yes.
Wow.
And so, I mean, I was started at 8 and I didn't finish till 4, and the day was just like gone.
So just coming as this guy's son who has known him my whole life, what, 29 years, he's not a people person. And so to hear I had one-on-ones with a bunch of different people all day, the day flew by. This is blowing my mind right now. So that, I mean, that must have been really good then.
I thought of you. One of the things I'm trying to get better at is being patient.
Yeah.
With people and relationships.
I'm kidding.
No, I mean, it's something I'm very impatient with that because it's just, yeah.
Well, anyway. I think one of the biggest things is you have learned all of these things, like you were saying earlier, you've learned all these things over years and years and years and years and years. And so it's one of those things where when you're up close and personal to something, you don't really notice the changes that are happening with it. But then as soon as you zoom out and you, or like for a kid, for instance, if you see a kid, like someone's son or daughter, and you're not going to see him for another 2 years, and you go see him again, you're like, whoa, they've grown so much. Whereas if you're with the kid, it's like, yeah, they've grown up, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Your skill set is the same way where you're like, I don't really see it change a lot. And then when you go talk to someone who doesn't know as much as you, you're kind of like, yes, this is what this is. This is what this is.
That's not my voice when I'm saying
no,
that.
I don't think it is. But I'm just saying like, see, that wears on you.
Thing that energized me was helping people.
Cool.
I think the thing that energized me was that there was people with specific problems that I was like, well, you ought to try this. You ought to try this. You ought to try this. You know, the example I told you earlier, which would be an example so people know what I'm talking about, is one of the guys, he's trying to build his business. And, you know, I go back to the Dan Parrish episode that we had, whatever episode number that was, that we were so blown away with the first session. We're like, we got to have another session.
Yeah.
And the way Dan runs his business and the things he's trained his guys to do is, I mean, it's world class. Mm-hmm. And so I was saying to this guy, you got to go listen to this thing because, yeah, you know, Dan's already figured it out and it'll blow you away. And mm-hmm. he sent me an email a few days later going, okay, that blew me away. And mm-hmm. in fact, I shared it with all my guys and my team. And, you know, so helping people, you know, find their way and share lessons that we've, you know, stumbled across and things like that. Some of the guys, you know, are making mistakes that I made 10 years ago. I was like, yeah, been there, done that. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You're making the right decision there. Yeah. You got to stop doing that. You know? And so
one thing that they're sharing with us at North Bennett is, you know, there's no secrets here. Like I'm not going to sit here and go, all right, I'm going to share up to you within a certain extent of what I'm willing to pass along. But right. past this point, I'm not going to, you know, share anything else. That philosophy on learning and like knowledge and other stuff, I feel like that is the one we should have unless we want to lose things to time. So you have that philosophy, right? It's like you're not trying to hide anything from people. You're trying to share as many things as you've learned.
Yeah, no, it's over a great time. Point. I mean, I think that one of the guys was like, "Why are you doing this?" And like I appreciate it, but what do you do? Why? I mean, my answer was I love it and I want other people to get better. I'm a learner too, right? Mm-hmm. I love learning. I love learning new things. One of the interesting things, another guy had it anecdotally. He said, I started out in the restaurant business. I was mm-hmm. a chef. He goes, in the chef world, if you go to a new restaurant and you go to work for them, they show you everything. They show, hey, this is how we do this. This is our secret sauce. This is this. It's a complete sharing of information and an open-handedness. He goes, when I got into building, no one talked to anybody about anything. No one was sharing information. He goes, in my view, Instagram is a great method to learn because there's guys sharing their information. And I was like, I just thought that was an interesting insight. Mm. And one of the things I had hoped, one of my hopes for Master Builder was that it would be a group of guys who basically said, I think this is why everybody stuck around on Saturday. It was a pretty open group. I mean, I said from the beginning, look, guys, as far as I'm concerned, you asking me any question, there's no off-limit question here. How much money I make, you know, what we charge, any of those things, because I want you to, you know, this needs to be an open group. And so I think there was that. There was a lot of people going around going, are you cost plus? Are you fixed price? And so it was.
And was there a good variety of all sorts of kinds?
Well, most builders today are fixed price in the custom world. Cost plus. Yeah. And so,
just as a reminder, cost plus is you do the cost of materials plus the labor.
Yeah. So all the costs on the job plus a fee.
Okay.
So our cost plus is between 20% and 25%. Mm-hmm. And so cost plus, you know, 25 if it's a smaller job, cost plus 20 if it's a big job.
And then what's the
fixed price? is that basically, you know, I'll build your house for $2,327.18. And if you build it according to these plans, if you do it like this, this is my bid. There's my number. There's no, there's no haggling. There's no, it's just, that's what it is. And if there's change orders, they give you a change order and your price
that
changes.
Adds to the,
And so it's been an interesting evolution with clients, because I remember 25 years ago, everybody wanted a fixed price. And probably 20 years ago, 15 years ago, most clients were like, look, I don't want a fixed price. I want to see all the costs. I want to see everything. And that may be our clients changing. It may be as you went to higher volume, they didn't care as much. I don't know what it was, but, and I'm not sure if I'm spending $2-4 million. I think I want to see all the costs.
Yeah, I think so too. I think there's something to, I mean, just thinking of the healthcare industry, right? Where you ask for an itemized receipt of all your things and it's like Band-Aid, $238. You're like, I don't think that's, you know what I mean? Like there's a benefit to see, and especially in a world where you are an expert and the homeowner never is claiming to be an expert, or the home builder or the person who's building a home. So it'd be helpful to see that, similar to the healthcare industry where it's like, I'm not an expert on medicine, but I would like to see what, you know, why I'm paying, you know, $60,000.
No, I think that's actually a good example. So there was a good mix of guys. One guy was fixed price builder. He was the only one. Mm-hmm. No, that's not true. There's two.
Yeah.
But one was floundering whether he was going to stick with that. Hmm. And then the fixed price builder who was very successful at it, he had a very large company, the very happy customers, but he had a very sophisticated and large team that managed his project managers and their jobs, they don't do any ordering material. They don't do any estimating. They schedule and manage the job, but a separate department orders all the materials. They've estimated the job completely. They hand off this estimate to go execute this thing. Let me know when you're ready for doors. We're going to order doors. We're going to do all this stuff. Wow. It is cool.
A lot of organization,
a lot of systems in place in order to do that. Whereas we're much lighter on our administration level, and so that we don't have that level of
department A
back
talking
office
to department B.
stuff. that could do, you know, all that ordering and handle all that stuff. And so, you know, I learned that. I go, it really, in order to be successful at a fixed price, you really have to have kind of that back office that a lot of us don't have. And so everybody else was cost plus something. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, it was from that perspective, it was really good to all be kind of listening to each other. And it's just good to hear, are you cost plus? Yeah, I'm cost plus. Okay. Me too. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that does make sense.
Or even, are you cost plus? No, I'm fixed price. Okay. Why?
Yeah.
You know, 100%. Like, that's helpful.
We had one build, which I thought was really impressive, who decided in college he wanted to be a builder. And he went to work for all the trades for 6 months. So he went to work for the electricians for 6 months. He went to work for plumbers for 6 months.
Yeah.
He went to work drywall guys, framers, trim carpenters, so that he understood how to build. And I was impressed by that. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what you're doing at North Bennett Street, but it's much more focused and specific. And, you know, he's learned a lot. He has a good reputation with the trades because he understands what they've done, what they've gone through. I just think that that's a model that if you really want to be a good builder, you know, what I don't think he'd mind if I said Lucas Gibbs out in Abilene did is this. And, you know, he's hands-on and doing that stuff. And I was impressed. And I think it's impressive because there are so many paper contractors out there, mm-hmm. guys who just shuffle paper, don't really know how to bid. They're just organizers and mm-hmm. stuff. Go pick your brick, go pick your windows, all get it installed.
Yeah.
As opposed to really helping people.
You actually probably don't want that. You probably want me about
that. Not only that, but that they see the mason putting brick up and you're like, wait, where are your brick ties? Like, mm-hmm. why are you doing that? No. We want this kind of bonding. We want this kind of thing. We want this. No. That's the detail. I want you to do it this way. To have that level of experience to be able to go, wait, what you're doing is not right. Don't try to pull one over on me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Especially in this field where there are people out there, charlatans who will try to pull one over on whoever. And I've never really experienced a lot of leg pulling in business world and stuff like that. Like there was an auto shop that we started going to in Denver because it was recommended to us because the guys were really honest. And I feel like that's the number one area where you kind of get totally bamboozled. And so we were getting like $35 oil changes. And like, it was like the cost of the oil. It was crazy. And I would always go to these guys and just say, hey, whatever needs to be done on my car, if you think it's important, please handle it. And the other guy, you know, if I did that at a Grease Monkey or, you know, whatever else, they're like, you know, changing an air filter when it's brand new. You know what I mean? Just right. like pulling a little. So I've never really had that experience until this summer where we had this guy come out and put internet in at our lake house in Canada. And the guy talks to me, he goes, yeah, we're not allowed to get up on a roof because just insurance reasons. I was like, what in the world? Okay, I've never heard of that one. And so he like half installs this thing and then goes, yeah, my day ends right now because I've got a 35-minute drive home, so I actually can't do that. I can't finish it. And it was like, he needed to install like one more thing and then turn it on. That was like it was like a screw and then turn it on. And so basically he was like, I'll be back out tomorrow first thing. So he doesn't show up. And then the next guy comes out and he goes, yeah, the guy put it in a dumb location. I'm actually just going to move it over here. And I was like, but what about the roof line rule? He's like, I can't get on your roof. I'll walk on your roof right now. I'm like, yeah, well, put it where it makes sense, please. So the guy comes up there, completely takes care of us. And anyway, I've never seen that difference type of thing before, but especially in construction, there is the ability for someone to just go, you don't really know anything that you're talking about. I'm going to pull one over on you. And it's crazy what people are willing to do. I've never really considered it like wanting to do that to someone, but people will just do it. It's crazy. I
mean, if you think about the semi-custom world, there are, you know, a lot of those houses are being built based on a, you know, price per square foot.
Yeah.
And so I need my brick installed at, you know, I'm just making up a dollar a square foot when it costs us as a quality builder $4 a square foot.
Yeah.
So they are running through subs who are trying to live on cash flow.
Yeah.
That they get a deposit, they get started, they run away, then you know, don't show up. And so it's not always bamboozling as much as it is that you know, mantra of it has to be cheap and it has to be fast.
Burns people out.
And you know, you can't stay in business very long doing that. And so anyway, and then I did ask to look at their finances, and one of the reasons why, and I didn't spend a lot of time looking at their finances, but one of the reasons I did is because there's a lot of guys that can be living off cash flow mm-hmm. and think that they're profitable. In other words, they got a $200,000 deposit, they finished the job, they look back and they go, yeah, I made some money. Let's say they made 10%, mm-hmm. but their overhead's 20%. So they're really losing money.
Right.
And so
it's not going to show up for
the fifth 10
jobs, 20 jobs.
Yeah, exactly. And the robbing Peter to pay Paul, and they don't know it because they're really not good at looking at their books. That's why I asked. Most of them were very sophisticated and had their, you know, stuff together. And so it was kind of a, Okay, yeah. Good. These guys are in a good place. And then the last thing we did was a personality test, which was the Enneagram, looking at that. Just so that, you know, if they're an eight, and, you know, which is what I am. And
eight,
you
know, pretty aggressive.
Yeah, you tend to trample on feelings. But you have, they tend to be very goal-oriented. And so they're just like,
get her done.
Yeah, we're going to be out here. We're going to get this. We're going to point A. I don't care who I have to walk over to get to point A, but that's our objective. And whereas, you know, somebody else, a six or whatever else, would be very concerned about people's feelings and want
to. Oh, yeah.
You know, there was a few threes in the group. Mm-hmm. And
will you explain that? Three is the achiever.
And so, or a two, maybe a better example.
Is the helper
that you end up helping everybody else. You don't look after yourself. Mm-hmm. And so there's a few guys who weren't managing, you know, themselves very well, and they needed
because they were carriers.
They needed to understand that was kind of their default, mm-hmm. and so,
which is it's not to say you learn that and then go, okay, I need to switch to another number or something.
No, yeah,
it's just I need to know that about myself so that I know that my weakness is I'm going to tend to put others before myself, and that ultimately may be the worst thing. Like if you're, you know, a boss running a business. It may be the worst thing in the world if you're a two and you don't manage it well, because you end up putting others before yourself, whether that be clients, someone else, but then ultimately the business collapses because you were putting so many people above yourself that now the people that you were putting above yourself are now without a job, or you know what I mean? So it's like, it seems like it's good on paper, but there is some finagling
where you can run yourself ragged trying to make everybody happy that you don't self-preserve. And
you're not able to perform.
Yeah, you're not able to perform.
And then the opposite. I mean, the eights are obvious to see because it's like, eights are going to walk over everyone, and they're going to... Sevens are all about having fun. And so that's that obvious flaw.
They're laid back.
But nines are a peacemaker. So they might tend about, we just need to keep the peace. We can't... And a lot of problems are festering under the surface. So there's a good thing and a weakness.
Exactly. It's the strength and weakness. And so the strength of the eight is that, you know, we tend to get stuff done.
Yep.
The weakness is that, you know, the trail of destruction, emotional destruction we can leave behind us is not
great.
Good. So anyway, did we accomplish the goal of helping people get better at being a master builder? I hope so, right? You know, the reason we did a personality test, the reason I looked at finances was because we wanted to make sure this whole person is going forward. There's no point in learning to sketch if you can't make money, and if you're losing money. It's a silly thing. But at the same time, you know, over your career, you know, great architects know how to sketch. They know how to communicate from their head what they're seeing onto paper. You need to be able to do the same thing.
So you can bring up great architects, and I think Master Builder University, that's a deceptive name because you're saying, you know, I want you to be a master builder. And great architects know how to sketch. Well, what about master builder? I feel like the more I'm learning at North Bennett Street, the more I'm realizing like the master builder was so much more than it is today. And there's so much behind what it looks like to be a master of builder, a master of craft, carpentry, whatever it may be. But especially when it comes to running a business and other things like that, the more well-versed you are is the better.
Well, yeah. And you know, the reason it's called Master Builder University is because the master builders of the past were the architects, were the designers, were the craftsmen, were the builders. They were all of those things.
Not one of those things. They were all of
those things
together.
The architect means master builder. Okay. Arca is chief, major, like, and trave is
like arch, is, like is
beam, but tect is to build. So master builder.
Huh.
And so that's what architect means. And so, you know, there are no architects in the United States no licensed architects before the 1880s. There's no architecture school before 1880s. There's only about four or five by the early 1900s. And so, you know, I don't think the profession is licensed in America until the early 1900s. And so, it is a fairly young profession from the perspective of how old the practice of building is.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's why I say architect is that these would be skills that 200 years ago the master builder possessed. And today it's separated. The architect does design, the master builder puts it together, and I want those to be combined.
Yeah. I think the thing that comes to mind when you say that is the phrase jack of all trades.
Yeah.
And I think it's been turned into a negative phrase.
Right.
And I may have mentioned this on the podcast before, but master, jack of all trades, master of none. Everyone's like, yeah, you're a jack of all trades, but you're a master of none. But the rest of that whole saying is jack of all trades, master of none, still always better than a master of one. And so it's, you know, I think there is a lot to be said about having a wide, you know, we just know about it, like being able to market yourself, being more marketable means you can do more things. And so, especially just thinking about the guy from Abilene who did all of the different things, he has experience in all those different things, but that composes the whole of what he's doing. So it's a really smart way of going about, I want to figure this out. I want to do this. So I'm going to go do this. You know, I'm going to do all the parts so that I can make up the whole. That's really cool. Just,
yeah,
gets me excited about
that. That's right. I'm thinking about that statement. It's really, you don't want to be a one-trick pony, right?
Right.
You do want to have all these different skill sets. And I think that's what you're learning in North Bennett.
Yeah, it definitely is.
You will get a taste of a bunch of different things
Yeah.
So.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
I think that wraps up a good discussion on Master Builder University. Do you have anything else that you felt like was missed or needed to be added?
No, I mean, it's... You know, I think, you know, since we only did it last weekend, it's still fairly new in my mind as far as what we haven't got all the reviews back. And mm-hmm. So there's follow-up that I'm doing with a bunch of the guys. So part of the whole program was that in 3 weeks and then 3 months, I'll follow up with them and kind of see how they're doing.
That's awesome.
And so, you know, I'm looking forward to that. I might go out and visit a couple of these guys because they're close by.
That'd be really neat.
Yeah, I mean, it's still early and new, but I'm hopeful that this is something that has legs.
Yeah.
And that's something that we can, you know, maybe take to companies, maybe go to one of these larger builders and sit down with their design team and go, all right, let's work through some, you know, design issues and let's build better houses. So,
Just before we wrap up, what was the spread of the people that came here? Like, how far away did everyone come from? Or was it all pretty close in the DFW area?
There was Indiana, probably five were up from the upper New England. Yep. Yeah, Rhode Island, New Jersey, New York, Brooklyn, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Arizona, Louisiana, Alabama, a couple from Texas. So yeah, it's a good spread.
Good spread.
Yeah,
that's really good spread. Okay, cool. Well, I mean, it sounds like it was a rousing success. I mean, it looked like, just looking at the care that you put into, you know, putting the program together and seeing the schedule and all that, you know, I was brain behind the scenes hoping that it all went well.
Appreciate that. Yeah, Brittany, who's on my team, brand manager, she helped a ton.
She's great at that
stuff.
She's
great, and she helped us organize the equipment and, I mean,
the
curriculum and everything else. So, yeah, it was good. So, yeah, very thankful for that.
So, if, like, gun to your head today, you had to decide, would you do it again tomorrow?
Yes.
Yeah.
With changes, but yeah.
With changes, yeah. Does that change include drawing off the shelf, or do you keep drawing?
I still share that. I mean, we only spent probably an hour doing
that's not
that.
Bad.
Yeah,
that's
so it wasn't bad. Like we spent 6 hours trying to sketch.
I think, especially knowing the heartbeat behind it, it does make sense.
Yeah,
so. I there were a couple in, just so you know, North Bennett, where everyone was like, "Why are we drafting? What's going on?"
I think that's one of the secret sauces that if you guys can know how to do that, you're way up on the competition. So you can tell your people that. I think it's crucial.
Yeah.
Crucial.
Yeah. We haven't drawn curves yet. So we've done a box with a lot of straight lines, and I was really good at that. Straight edge. But if we get the curves, I'm really worried about, like, looking at that, the slope and everything like that. It's going to be a lot.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. And then bring Ionic into the picture. No idea what I'm going to do there. So anyway, that's exciting about Master Builder. I'm psyched that it went well.
Yeah.
Super exciting. That's fun stuff.
Cool. Man.
All right. Thank you guys for watching this episode, and we'll catch you on the next one.